Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
Jerry Thorney of the Irish Times is with us. Uncle Travelling Matt from the... I don't know if you get that reference.
Sorry, what?
The Fraggles.
No.
All right.
Sorry, straight over my head.
I thought we were... Grant, that's fine.
Didn't you hear the word? Do you want to try to be third time lucky?
Uncle Travelling Matt from the Fraggles. There you go. How was New Zealand?
How was New Zealand? It was quite good, actually. By and large, yeah, overall... It passed quicker than I thought it would. I think the matches and travelling constantly helped that process. The weather was milder than I've ever known it in June before. I think that was my 10th time there, or certainly 9th, and all bar one was in June, and it's pretty cold and wet and miserable, so that helps. The weather helps.
Is it grim, like in winter? Because
yeah,
it looks
be very
grim on TV. It looks
early evenings. You know, you're leaving a summer extended evenings here and you're going to early darkness there, 5:30, 6 o'clock, whatever. But really, I didn't find it nearly as grim as before. I thought the weather was much milder, so that helps. The rugby was compelling, really compelling, and got better and better and more interesting and stuff. And I enjoyed that aspect too. It was the first time I ever going to New Zealand, I actually saw the All Blacks beaten, which is very nice, to be honest, because you're going there 20 years and never seen them beaten. You think you're never going to see this. And to see it was quite, I found it very momentous being in Wellington. I found it one of the greatest rugby events I've been at, almost as good as Chicago, right up there, that kind of level. Maybe not as good as Ireland winning the Grand Slam at 09, but really one of the... Or as good as, say, the France All Blacks quarterfinal in Cardiff or something like that, or Twickenham when Loma was at his pomp. But very, very, very memorable rugby experience. So I'm forgetting stuff, but the matches were compelling. I think every game was interesting. I think there were 7-1 score games, including a couple of draws. So, you know, the rugby was absorbing.
Yeah.
And playing the franchises actually made it more interesting than playing a lot of provincial sides running
you know
up big scores.
And, you'd know them and their coaches would be high profile and they'll all at some point end up in this part of the world. Just the people. So you wrote a really interesting piece about the analysis on TV of one of the games when Stuart Barnes was supposed to be there but was ill, and so there was no balance in the piece. But this was after the Sean O'Brien had been cleared, and it was after that whole process. So the coverage.
John Kirwan reckoned that Sean O'Brien should have received the same punishment as Sonny Bill Williams.
Yeah.
The two incidents weren't remotely comparable. But anyway.
So that's what the
one
eyed.
One shoulder. Yeah, that's what. Yeah.
The one eyed media is like that. And are the rugby fans as a result poisoned by that, or are they actually far more engaged, interesting, and
well, there's a
curious?
Mix. There's a mix. Like a lot of New Zealand rugby coverage is actually quite balanced, particularly on match days, because sometimes they replay the games quite a fair bit, so you'd see the replays of the match with commentary. And Justin Marshall could not be more balanced. He's a fantastic co-commentator, and as is Grant Nesbitt's a very good commentator, and Ian Smith's very good in the touchline. So the television presentation is actually quite balanced.
Is that free to air as a matter of interest?
No. Sky Sports New Zealand. Right. But Marshall gets absolutely hammered on social media because he's not your
one-eyed.
Typical one-eyed, myopic Kiwi pundit. So you get a mix. A lot of people were very embarrassed by the New Zealand Herald coverage, which certainly left...
That was the clown.
That was the clown. It wasn't just the second time they did the clown. It was daily demonisation of Warren Gatland, presumably because he had the nerve to say he didn't approve of the booing of Quade Cooper, nor did he approve of what they did with Michael Check and the New Zealand Herald, so they did to him as well. And it's sad to see the Herald, a paper I used to like an awful lot when Wyn Grey was the rugby correspondent, sadly he's now retired, just stoop to daily propagandist fanzine kind of coverage, fawning of the All Blacks, really, really... It left a sour taste in the mouth. I thought it was some of the worst I've ever come across in my entire career, Ger, in 20 years travelling abroad covering rugby. I don't think I've ever come across anything like it in South Africa or Australia by comparison. And the Herald was, like I said, would have been a paper I always would have liked. So you get the two extremes, but you get an awful lot of well-travelled Kiwis or former All Blacks or former rugby players who were embarrassed by some of the coverage of it, and would say so. And most of the people you met in the street, they'd pick up your accent. Like one day in Christchurch, three of us were having a cup of coffee in a cafeteria, maybe about a lunch, and one guy just, and this would be very typical, I remember this one guy over here, he just came over and says, "You're going to get better. The Lions are going to get better as the tour goes on, and you're going to give the All Blacks." And you know what? We want to see you give the All Blacks a good test. And that was the kind of reaction you get from an awful lot of punters, really, in the streets and so forth around the place. And of course, everybody was interested. Pretty much everybody was interested. When the Lions come to New Zealand, everybody in the country buys into it. So it was a very intense tour and a very enjoyable tour at the same time.
Yeah. Keith Wood, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Is there a case for us to start only going to New Zealand now after this tour? It's like, you know, unless maybe one of the other ones actually happens to win a World Cup again, and then they can come back and be on the cycle.
It is funny, really, how Lions tours tend to come after the team that we're going to play has just won the World Cup. It actually happens an awful lot and has happened a fair bit in the past. South Africa in 95, and then the Lions Tour in 97, 99 Australia, and then Australia 2001. I know there hasn't been for the last couple, but yeah, it is. It's kind of, it's interesting. All right, it became very good. I was interested in one of the comments you said there, Cherry, about Justin Marshall. I know Justin very well. he gets the most unbelievable amount of grief that he's biased against the All Blacks.
And all he is fair and balanced and called everything 50-50.
He is very fair. Yeah. And he's a really good guy. And
he's a brilliant commentator as well,
isn't he? He is, yeah. Really, really good. Yeah. And understands the modern game very well, understands an awful lot of what's going on, is kind of calls it as he sees it. But he gets incredible grief. It's quite interesting. I do think a lot of that commentary was poor. And like I would have said, it's funny, and I know you would have been on some of these trips, Jerry, and I remember going down in 2003. I remember going down on the Lions to Australia in 2001 and finding out that the media, the home media, became very aggressive to you, targeted you all the time. It was pretty constant. And we'd never noticed that with Ireland before, because Ireland were never a threat before. And I remember when we went down to the World Cup saying it, and saying it to the Irish management, listen, the press is going to turn on us in the next couple of weeks. And they're saying, no, they won't. They never, they're always lovely to us. And as sure as spuds are spuds, they, as soon as we started getting a week out from playing Australia, all the sort of nonsense in the press ramped up again. And I found that any time I went down to New Zealand, it was uncomfortable. That whereas they'd be nice to the supporters, and very supportive of the supporters, because the New Zealanders are very nice people, they almost couldn't help themselves without having an all cut at you if they could. And, I mean, they totally went over the board on this one.
Mm. You obviously wouldn't have seen the Sky coverage, but you would have, Keith. Did Sky not do, like, is it, I mean, are they not starting to get to that point where, like, all of the commentators and co-commentators are we and us and unbelievably jingoistic, and the pre-match, I bleed red lions.
Well, I thought it went too far, again, by a long time. There's so much invested in this in terms of time and coverage that it just goes a bit too big, you know. And I mean, there was a point that if the Lions hadn't won the second tour, it would have been, the second match, it would have been hard work to even watch the third one. You know, you didn't quite know where it was going to go, where you build it up to being the most important and biggest thing of all time. And yet, it turned out to be as good as you're going to get in rugby.
There is a point where you don't need hype sometimes. Like, look at this amazing thing over in the corner, and then just give us analysis and explanation for stuff. So it really felt like I wasn't learning that much from the coverage watching it.
No, I felt at times that you need to look at proper critical analysis, though it's very difficult on a Lions tour to analyse it very carefully, I think. Because a lot is held back, and a lot isn't held back from as if you've got a huge amount in your secret locker, but an awful lot isn't tried for the initial parts of a Lions tour, because guys just don't know each other, and because the level of competition was higher on this tour. Look, I thought there was more than enough hyperbole to go around everywhere. And we got excited with it too, Jerry, you know, and we did. And there is something phenomenal about it. But I do think, for me, I thought, yes, it went a little bit too over the top before the tests in terms of Sky. They get very excitable. They buy into it. It's a big thing for them. It's a huge part of their summer.
They're part of it.
They are part of it.
It's like L'Équipe with the Tour de France. You know what I mean? L'Équipe are actually one of the shareholders of the Tour de France, and they give the first 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 pages of their daily sports paper over to the Tour de France. And, you know, they're not as objective as they could be as a result. Sky needs the Lions now more than ever, because they're synonymous with the Lions since 1997, and they've just lost the European Champions Cup as well. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's made them more entrenched, as it were, in their pro-Lions stance.
It also ratchets up the value of the Lions to them and to the Lions as an organisation in terms of the TV deal next time around. the sense was that this was the Lions format playing for its future as much as anything. And if it had been a whitewash, they'd lost all the games against the franchises, then there wouldn't have been that much appetite from everybody to, I mean, I think it was probably going to survive. But there is still this stuff in the ether about maybe it'll be without the England players the next time.
I don't think it'll ever come to that. I think what the English clubs are doing now is basically bargaining for more of a slice of the cake. And of course, the Lions gets a very small slice of the cake under the outgoing deal. It's something like, I think, is it 1.5 million for each of the four home unions. Now, you'd wonder why the Scots would get the same as the English, the Welsh, the Irish, but they do. And, you know, so there's not much left then for the clubs to go around. You would have thought they're in a much stronger bargaining position now, given the amount of money the Lions generates for the local economy, hundreds of millions, about 40 to 50 million for the New Zealand union this time around, this tour, because they keep all the receipts and everything. They sell the TV rights for all the provincial games, the regional games, as well as the Test series. It's just an honour for them to play the Lions. So it's a huge boost, as it was for the Australian Rugby Union 4 years ago, South African Rugby Union 8 years ago. The Lions just make money for the host union.
Just to explain that, so the TV deal that Sky pays,
they get all the TV revenue heretofore has gone to the host union. That is why the Lions are such a commercial monster in many ways, because they need the commercial partners to make them viable. That they've got to pay, and when they go to somewhere like New Zealand, they are independent. They have to pay for their own accommodation, and so they're not hosted, not put up in hotels by the New Zealand union. They go around. Jerry Carmody did an article with him. He was planning this for over 2 years. He's visited New Zealand 3-4 times and gone through all the hotels and narrowing down options and so forth. And they would try and up their price by 4 and 5 times their normal price. No surprise there.
Yeah.
And so you would think that in the new current deal, they'd have to be allowed. They would have to get some of the TV revenue as well.
They've said that, Jerry, every time. It was a 10-year deal originally that was done in 1996 when the game went open. It was Fox. I think it was Fox Sky at the time in 1996. And it was a 10-year deal with a 5-year option. And that 5-year option seems to have a continual pickup, which doesn't seem to make any sense. And when you were down in New Zealand, we had one of the chats on the radio was talking about whether there'd be a review at some stage to decide how important the Lions was within the World Game, which it is very important, we think. And how does it fit in the World Game? And how is it done so that it is commercially viable, but also protective of the players? And, you know, having the systems that are set up for touring teams and for the Lions, as they're presently set up and have been, they were an amateur system. They were set up, built entirely on the fact that if New Zealand came over to play Ireland, Ireland would cover all their costs in Ireland. And then they'd fly back again, but Ireland would keep all the receipts. Well, that becomes a very difficult negotiation to have now, because the commercial realities are that the All Blacks will sell out everything, whereas Romania won't. And so there needs to be a new dynamic in terms of how some of these matches are done or not done, because and there is a flip to it, is because when the Lions go down, they don't get a sight nor sound of any of the money that's generated from TV. And we know that TV is what pays the big bucks.
Or the gate receipts. Like, there was 10 matches there. They were all sellouts. I think there was something like 380,000 people went to the 10 games. Like, I think you're right. I think the last two tours particularly have revived the brand hugely, because it's all very well and good bringing a Red Army of 20,000, 25,000 people to Australia in 01 and New Zealand in 05 and South Africa in 09 and then losing the series each time. And then I think what the last two tours have done, and perhaps even more so this one, I think you could argue that to go do what they did in the 10 match in this tour and come away having drawn a series with the All Blacks was arguably a bigger achievement than what they did in Australia 4 years ago.
Ah, yeah, it's way bigger.
And it's certainly revived the brand. It's hard to see a future without it. And I think for the English clubs to claim that in deference to player welfare, the tour should be reduced from 10 to 8 matches. If you look what Warren Gatland, that management and that coach and the playing staff achieved in New Zealand over the last 6 weeks, I don't think it would have been doable in eight matches. They needed all 10 to get there. They needed the five or six to get before the first test to make them ready for the test match series. I think if you take a week or trim a week off,
yeah,
you've no chance. Players have no chance putting their hands up to get into the squad, into the test team either at the start. It has to be a bare minimum 10 matches. And we don't need expansion of Pro 12 with South African teams. We don't need more Premiership playoffs or Pro 12 playoffs or expansion of the Anglo-Welsh Cup. What we need is good tours the end of season, and when the Lions come around once every 4 years, something has to be done to, you know, make sure it's 10 matches minimum.
Yeah, is there a straightforward way through the problems at the moment with the world calendar? Because there does seem to be some impetus to try and change things, Keith.
Well, there is a world calendar in kind of conversation at the moment. Look, for me, there always has been a, I can't say it's a perfect route, but a good route is, I would still believe in having a league system that's based with Britain and Ireland. The idea of having Italian teams in a Celtic league still strikes me as being kind of crazy, and the potential of having two South African teams even more crazy. And so the idea of trying to amalgamate and come to some agreement where you could have England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales playing almost as in a Lions league, and then you fit in a Lions tour at the end of that every 4 years, it can be factored in properly. I mean, there's an awful lot of work that would have to be done to make that happen, but that doesn't mean that it would be the wrong thing to happen, because the Pro 12 does well, but not anywhere near as well as it needs to do. And there's a lot of money in the UK, so there'd be a different divvy up of the spend, but that seems like the most comfortable fit for this to fit into the Northern Hemisphere calendar. And we know that if it does fit into the Northern Hemisphere, it can fit into the Southern Hemisphere.
Mm. No one's really talking about that. Like, I mean, I know some of the English club owners are talking about that, but I know that, like, you don't hear any of the unions suggesting that. You certainly don't hear the Pro 12 suggesting that the right thing for them to do is to become part of the Premiership, like two or three division league where there's meaningful competition. You can put the Italians in Division 2, no problems. Away they go, and they have competitive games that they can win, and maybe they get promoted. Like, I see a lot of merit in that, and no relegation from the bottom division. But I just can't see it, anybody agreeing to it at the moment. There's like a short window here where they could do it, but otherwise the calendar's going to get set, and it'll be set for another 10 years.
The politics are so unbelievably awkward, so that in dealing with Italy, as an example, Italy's role in the Pro 12 being a bit of an uncomfortable fit, but it also fits in with them being involved in the Six Nations. And so one hand is playing off against the other hand to make certain that that would happen. I think there needs to be a little bit more strength on these two islands if we can, because France will do their own thing all the time. To have the Premiership in England to be viable, because it still isn't viable, there's a few teams make a little bit of money, but very little money for the amount of money that's been put into them. That structure needs to expand somehow. So how can you maximize to do that and have some level of meritocracy that fits into it, whether there's different pools or different conferences or whatever it is to have the best? Because you know that if you go and watch Leicester play Munster, it'll be a full house, whether it's in Leicester or Munster, you know. And it's how is it to, you know, best maximise what we have at the moment, because everybody doing their own thing just makes it very uncomfortable. As we see every time there's an issue with an international window or an issue with a Lions tour. So it requires conversation, but, you know, I don't know whether people are still wanting to be fully in control of their own piece of the pie is what's holding it back. I don't know.
What do you think, Jerry?
I think it was a brilliant rugby series. I'm surprised we've gone off on this tangent. I don't think that the basic outline you've thought up for a season ahead is going to happen. I think there's some degree of loyalty towards the Italians. You have to keep them on board the Pro 12 because they need a leg up from somebody, and rugby has shown it takes a long time to get new countries up to the standards that, you know, the established powers have been. The French took a long time to get there. Then the French had to invest in turn in the Romanians and the Argentinians and the Italians and so forth. And, you know, most of the established powers don't do this. So I think it's good that the Italians are in our league, and it's going to have to take time. You hope they'll get up to speed. I don't think the season needs to change too much from what it is, other than I would like to see the Lions maintained as a 10-week tour, a 10-match tour for over 5 weeks with a week's preparation. I don't see why, with a little bit of foresight and planning,
like 4 years.
Could, the Lions couldn't have started this tour a week later, and we now would be facing into third test week this week.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see why that couldn't have been done. And it could easily have been done. Okay, I'm kind of glad that the rugby season is over, even though we're having our final Wednesday night rugby in the middle of July. But I would think that that would be a very good thing. I would like, just the one thing I've learned over the last year, I haven't always been a great fan of the Lions, and there's a lot of what about the Lions I don't like.
Yeah.
And the commercial juggernaut that it's become. But this tour particularly, I enjoyed the most of the five I've been on. I thought it was the best from a rugby perspective. I thought New Zealand were great hosts. And it was compelling rugby just all the way to the end. Like I said, that second test, although it was against 14 men for the way the Lions came back and the brand they won it.
What was
the drama of the third test?
Yeah, what was that moment where the referee's not quite sure if the game is over, and then he's like, yeah, actually, this game is probably over given that the ball is out of play and we have 86 minutes or whatever it was on the clock. What was that like?
The second test?
Or the third test, the silence.
Third test. It was quite extraordinary, all right, because there was this dawning realisation this could all end up in 4 years of 12 years of waiting, 4 years of planning, 6 weeks of playing 10 matches, and we're all going to go home with no winner. And there was just, when it happened, there was an eerie silence. Nobody knew whether to laugh or cry, and it was quite a stunned reaction. Oh, it's a draw. I would say half the people in the ground, and certainly it's emerged that several players on the pitch, including Warburton, Jonathan Davies and others, thought that there would be extra time. They were almost half braced themselves. And then Sam Warburton admits that he saw players shaking hands with each other from in red and black and real. Oh, it's all over. But like I think I hear it for draws. I think it's another unique end. It's never happened before in 12 visits from the Lions to New Zealand. We get draws all the time, and around September and the All-Ireland Championship, they're good for business, you know. They swell the coffers.
They get a replay, though.
Yeah,
there's none of this.
Yeah. No, I know, but, like, you know, draws are good as well, I think, in some respects. I don't think we should take the entirely American view that it absolutely has to be a winner all the time. It is what it is. I think it's led to some amazing pictures of the Lions and the All Blacks jerseys intermingling for the trophy presentation, the two captains sharing it. And maybe they didn't deserve to be a winner, whatever, but they didn't deserve to be a loser. I think you've got to give the Lions credit that they were only ahead for 3 minutes in the three matches. In the entire three-match series, only ahead for 3 minutes. But they were like a dog with a bone. The All Blacks couldn't shake them off. Now, the All Blacks definitely left tries behind galore in the first half. But the Lions stuck with it, and they were never more than a score behind. And once that was the case, they were always in it. I thought they showed incredible character. I thought they were brilliantly managed. I remember being in this studio with you, Ger, and you were less than enamoured by the idea of Warren Gatland being anointed as the new head coach. And I thought, remember at the time, thinking, well, wait a second, he's been assistant coach in one tour, he's head coach on a winning tour. If anybody's qualified, he's coached in Ireland, he's coached in Wales, and he's coached in England.
Yeah.
And let's face it, there ain't great need to coach in Scotland. And he's managed, I think he and the rest of the management staff have managed it brilliantly, right up to giving them the 2 days off in the third week. So they had some freshness and were still competitive in the last 20 minutes of the 52nd week of the season.
He did a great job.
He did an outstanding job. And you know what, he'll probably get the gig again in 4 years' time, unless something, I don't know, there's no outstanding character otherwise, is there? He could well get it again in 4 years' time.
Joe Schmidt.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. He's won a World Cup for Ireland.
But I do think that it's been great for business, and I think it's been great for rugby, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's been a great tour for rugby.
What are you going to remember about this, Keith? We obviously spoke in the immediate aftermath of the game, and you were, I think, happy enough with the draw as well. Sorry, just to tell everybody, Rosenberg have equalised against Dundalk this evening at Oriel Park. It's 1-1 in that game. What are you going to remember from this tour?
Well, I was confused, like everybody, at the end. And I knew that there wasn't extra time, but I was confused for my emotions from it. Was this great? Was it not great? It's also, I didn't like the way it finished. I didn't like the referee changing his decision, even though that would have meant bad stuff for the Lions. I'm happy that the Lions come away with something in their pocket from it, but not. I wasn't happy with that decision. So I was, you know, because I'm still a bit of an old fuddy-duddy traditionalist at times. But when I stepped away from it, and later on that day, you put it down as being a phenomenal Lions tour of a lot of things going very well. I didn't like the overhype. I didn't like some of the hype in relation to the opposition that was being played. I thought some of the teams weren't as good as they were billed. That they were playing against the Maori in particular were well off the mark. And but I thought as the team progressed, as they grew, as some of the players played well, as the defence seemed to just totally unnerve the All Blacks, I thought that was brilliant. I love watching the All Blacks play. I think they are a pleasure to play or to watch. They play a beautiful brand of rugby. But I did love the fact that that could be dismantled. And I thought that that was fantastic. I think the Lions is an enthralling brand, an enthralling idea, an ideal that you can pit yourself against the best in the world with just a few weeks and deliver something like that. I think that's fantastic. I thought the coaches did an incredible job. I thought the players did a great job. I was really thrilled that there were very few injuries. And then in the last week, we seem to have picked up a few more, which I'm a bit sad about that, but that's all. But I thought they'd managed the injury well. The injury profiles very well.
Yeah.
I thought it was extraordinary. It was compelling television. And, you know, when you're not going down there and you're watching it from afar, the 80 minutes of the game in itself was a sight to see.
Also, it was great to see significant number of Irish players making such a positive contribution to it, like Sean O'Brien showing what Sean O'Brien can be. That you want to listen to the radio commentary and the TV commentaries in New Zealand to realise how much they respect this guy. I can't, apart from Brian O'Driscoll, there's no Irish player in the professional era that's generated such respect. Everywhere he goes, he's just referred to as the Tolo Tank, and everything he does on the pitch is just hailed. He really is hugely respected down there. And I thought Conor Murray comes back enhanced status as probably the world's best scrum half. Certainly, it's fair to describe him now as world class. It was great to see Johnny Sexton come through in the manner he did. And of course, there was some standout Welsh and English performers in it too, not least Jonathan Davies. Toby Faletau played 6 matches and played the full 80 in all 6, was only on the losing side once, and made more tackles per minute than any other Lions player. I mean, he was a real warrior for them, and there was lots of others like that. So, and injuries contributed to that fact that they were able to retain a strong core of the squad throughout. But I think 7 of the starting 15 in the third test were in that first camp in the Vale of Glamorgan. You know, they're certainly in the second one in Carton House, when the Lions got lucky that Leinster, the Scarlets and Saracens all suffered semi-final defeats, and for nothing else it gave them their 3 at halves that extra week in Carton House. So really something's got to be factored into the future to give them any kind of chance of being competitive.
From an Irish perspective, the players who were on the Lions tour, obviously it looks like injury.
Tyke Ferdinand, of course, as well.
Yeah, sensational. I'd be inclined to give them all extended breaks and make sure that they're not really back playing serious rugby.
I was astonished when Tyke Ferdinand came into the mix zone after the third test and told he's looking forward to his 3.5 weeks holidays. After the season he had, that, whatever about physically, mentally, that just didn't seem nearly enough. What do you think, Keith?
Was he saying was that being tongue-in-cheek?
No. 3.5 weeks holidays, what he's got.
No, but was he being tongue-in-cheek that he was looking forward to only having 3
Well, he was looking forward to his holidays, and he mentioned the fact that he had 3.5 weeks off. And he seemed to be presenting it in a very matter-of-fact way, that this was the way it was.
Yeah, he'll get over that pretty promptly, because he needs more than that. And one of the key components back. It's funny, I was watching tennis today, of all things, and listening to comments about Andy Murray, and having hit number one in the world, he didn't want to stop that feeling and keep that going. So he went back a little bit earlier and pushed it very hard early to try and keep up at the top of the game. It's a long, long career. I know it sometimes can be a short career, but if you want to make certain that it can peak at the right moments at the right time. I know from my own history, but I also know from watching the Lions for my whole life, is if you look at the next 4 or 5 months, we will see players dropping like flies if they don't have a break. So the bigger break they can get, the better we'll see them in their provincial colours or in their Irish colours. And they need a big break.
Look, I realise Leinster have an injury crisis at the moment, but notwithstanding that, anybody who went on that tour, I would be inclined to say, off you go until the end of September or October. In Roy Best's case, I'd be saying, as Ireland, if you want him to play in 2 years' time as our number one hooker, which he probably will be, then I'd be saying, come back around Christmas there. I understand that there's been a bit of a wear and tear on you. Go on, go off and take a break, because we have to think long term about this.
They've done it in New Zealand. They did it with Carter and did it with McCaw. They have a little look and offer players a chance to go away and play somewhere else just to refresh or to take a bit of a break. We've never looked at that. If I was to be brutally honest, whether I would have had the confidence to do that myself, I'd love to have taken a break in the middle of my career to try and tidy up some of the injuries I had. And I think when we have players that have proven to win, and we have winning players, how great it is that we've got a group of Irish players that have beaten the All Blacks twice and drawn with the All Blacks. How cool is that? We need to try and make certain that we look after them as well as we can.
All right. Good stuff, lads.
Cheers.
Happy 3.5 weeks holidays to both of you two for Wednesday. Might be a bit longer. We might stretch it given the...
We have to have pre-season training too, Jerry.
The hard work you put in. It's been great having
Wednesday
you.
Wednesday night rugby in middle of July. Yeah.
I know, yeah. Who'd have thunk? Jerry Thorney, the Irish Times, Keith Wood. Thanks, lads.
Cheers. Thank you.
We're going to bring you up to date on the Limerick-Clare game with Jamesy after these.
Off the Ball,
home of the Saturday panel.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.